Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 285 of the Roguecast, recorded January 28th, 2020. Mental organism designed only for comedy. All right, so we are at the tail end of January, and finally a bounty of new comics has arrived. I've been having a hard time finding a pick these last few weeks. This week I had trouble narrowing it down. There's a lot of good comics this week.
Yeah, it's interesting. It didn't look like a real strong week, like I think at a glance.
Yeah.
But then we ended up finding stuff.
Yeah. For me, and it's mostly second issues and that, not a lot of new stuff, but...
There were some second issues that were actually better than their first issues.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like a preview. You're laying the seeds for picks to yet to come.
Yes.
All right. So, coming up in a couple weekends, CTX Teens and Kids Comic Con. I'll be doing a D&D 101 presentation. That is Saturday, February 15th. I have the time now, which is 11 a.m. Last time it was basically full place, so if you want to come, make sure and come out early. Well, don't come early. It's 11 o'clock.
And what is it exactly you're doing, Randy?
I'm doing a D&D 101 presentation for, like, mostly for kids and teens.
Okay, just kind of a gist of D&D.
You'll come in and you'll learn how to build, you'll build a character in real time.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a presentation I did last year. I was pretty successful, and I'm doing basically a new version of it this year.
You gotta show those little kids how to min-max.
Yep.
Of course, that's the main thing.
Uh-huh.
That's it. That's all I got.
On Monday, this coming Monday... We will be starting our annual inventory sale, so you can come. There'll be a big stack of stuff. We've gone through some comics. We've pulled DC and Marvel and some games, and man, the...
exceptionally good comics this year.
Really
I haven't looked
stuff.
At the games list, but I know the comics have some really good ones, and I was like, no, how can it be?
The deal is, if something hasn't sold for us in 2 years, it goes on the inventory sale, and we clear it out. There's some stuff in there, like Ed Brubaker's Catwoman... Everything Darwin Cook except for New Frontier that I am loath to part with, but that means somebody's going to get a really good deal.
Somebody's going to get Ego and Other Tales. And
Gotham Central.
Yeah.
Just all kinds of goodies in
there. So we'll probably spotlight some of our favorites next week once the sale's been up and running for a couple of days. But if you want to get the very first shot at it, come out on Monday and take a look at this table full of cool stuff to buy at a discount. And that's, of course, one of, like, four sales we do a year, so...
Yeah.
Pretty notable.
So this is your time.
All right. Let's turn to news. Captain Marvel 2 has been officially announced as development.
Yep.
Yay.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be in the present.
Yeah. I'm kind of disappointed by that. I kind of would have liked to have seen how she grew from the Carol at the end of Captain Marvel to the Carol we saw in Avengers Endgame.
So she was off-world that... Most of that time? All of that time?
Yeah, I hope there's at least flashbacks and stuff to showing how she became this character.
I think there probably would be.
Yeah.
Is there a particular reason she's not aging?
Her
cosmic power.
The cosmic stuff?
Yeah, she got her powers from the Cosmic Cube. Not the Cosmic Cube,
The Tesseract.
Tesseract, yeah. So I think that probably has negated aging or something.
You're going to show up and Sam Jackson's going to be like, you're looking considerably better than I am.
Well, it's going to be tricky is that the actress is, of course, aging.
Sure.
So.
Well, all they have to do is kind of go with a...
Age slowly kind of thing.
Age slowly, or it could even be like something specific to like the last 20 years or whatever,
And the aging thing no longer matters.
You're right, they can de-age everyone because they de-aged Samuel Jackson in Captain Marvel. So.
Right, she's going to be 70 years old.
And still playing her as a 20-something.
Yeah. They're going to actually have her get younger.
Yeah.
She'll go through in some device.
Baby Captain Marvel.
Yeah. Like, we could get another actress for this who's 16, but instead we're going to DH her.
There's news, a lot of news of development here together. So, Bad Robot, the guys who did, J.J. Abrams' production company, they did Star Trek, they did Star Wars, they did Alias, Lost.
Usually a pretty good company.
They're developing Justice League Dark TV shows and movies, which does not mean a Justice League Dark, like, show, but the characters in Justice League Dark. So, Constantine, Zatanna...
Yeah.
Who else is in
Etrigan.
There? Etrigan, all those. So they're going to try and look at that. They're going to do sort of the magic side of the DC universe.
But they're not doing it as a team book
right.
necessarily.
No, it's just like that's the ages
they're developing
under which they're
those.
Developing.
And TV and movies.
Yes.
Do we think that this will connect up with the DC movies?
No, I don't think they're going to tie into anything. I think
it'll be like an Etrigan standalone movie that doesn't necessarily have any other DC ties.
Exactly.
It'll tie in with the other...
other things that don't tie into things?
Yeah, basically they're creating their own little section. Just think the Justice League Dark
I actually think that could almost work with the Justice League Dark people.
I do too.
But it's also one of those things where I'm like... what's the point of your stupid shared universe if you're just going to fragment it?
Well, there's two arguments I would make. One, DC shared universe is already dead. They've screwed that up so badly that it is not a shared universe.
But Superman showed up in Shazam.
In Crisis, they basically said it's the multiverse. And everything is its own thing.
Their extended universe is bad, and they need to fix it before they worry about making new movies into it. Second, it's about as connected as, say, Venom and Morbius.
Yeah.
So it's having your own little mini shared universe is not unheard of.
Yeah, it's just weird. I feel like there's so many lessons were to be learned from Marvel, but
Well, they've clearly, I mean, at this point, it's 10 years in, more than 10 years in.
Yeah.
They're clearly not going to follow the Marvel model.
Yeah. There's not a unified DC universe to happen.
And that's a shame, but at this point I've had to make my peace with that, and I'm like, well, maybe there'll be some movies I like.
Like I said, I do think this one could potentially work, something that has Etrigan and Constantine and those guys. Yeah.
But even then, I mean, they may not be connected. They might just do, like, here's an Instagram movie, and here is Detective Chimp. Who else is in that, the Justice League Dark? I don't know who's in it.
Enchantress?
I guess which version are you talking about? There's been multiple versions
of Justice League
any of Dark.
Yeah.
Because I think one had, like, the Shining Knight in it.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, that was, the New 52 one.
Well, I don't know if Detective Chimp is in it. He was in Shadow Pact.
He was in Shadow Pact,
A Detective Chimp TV show, like, where it's just him doing Case of the Week, I'd watch that.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Honestly, they should do that as the next animated thing. Harley is getting such a kind of boon.
People love Harley Quinn.
It's really good, another episode. Actually.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, maybe you guys, if we get a chance, maybe y'all can talk about it in the topics if we have time for it.
But a Detective Chimp in that style, I'd watch it.
I absolutely would not.
Is that just because you don't like talking chimps?
That
can't be because you like Planet of the Apes.
Those are like sophisticated, mighty, deadly chimps.
Deadly pitch.
The little comical monkeys that do their wacky stuff in the DC Marvel and DC universes. I don't like.
So you don't like Beppo?
No.
Let me pitch.
But
you this.
But I do like Solivar and Grodd.
Let me pitch you this.
Right.
It's Detective Chimp, but it's basically Columbo. He's Columbo. Tell me you wouldn't watch that.
Wouldn't watch that.
Only if Peter Falk actually.
Well, that's gonna be tricky, isn't he, Dad?
He probably is.
They can CGI him younger.
But they can't CGI him alive.
They
can animate his corpse.
That's the hook. That's the hook of the show.
Coming to NBC, the animated corpse of Peter Falk.
Corpse Lumbo.
All right.
There's just one more thing I'd like to talk about. I'm dead.
There was some good news, bad news coming out of Hulu. Hulu has the last bits standing of Jeff Loeb's fading TV universe.
Yep.
They announced officially that Tigra and Dazzler and Howard the Duck has been canceled, but they are going forward to Patton Oswalt's MODOK.
That is to say, canceled before they ever appeared.
Yeah,
right?
They're not going to do it. There's no bad news in this for me. I did not want to see those animated series. I was pretty sure they're going to screw them up. And Patton Oswalt's MODOK being the only one, I'm good with it.
To me, the only bad news in this is that MODOK didn't go down with the rest of them.
That's fair. The only reason I mentioned MODOK is because Patton Oswalt is going to be
and that's
producing
fair too.
And voicing.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
the rest of the voice cast is pretty amazing.
Oh, it's a great voice cast. But I am kind of with Dave in that I used to think that a sort of humorous MODOK made sense and was kind of fun, and now it's been done so often that I'm tired of it and I want it to be serious again.
Yeah. It was like the Deadpool perspective on it became the only perspective.
Yes, exactly.
And they're like, he's a giant ant, he's so crazy. And I'm like, there's a bunch of cool old stories where he's cool.
But he's also designed for killing.
Yeah.
He's not designed for comedy. That's MODOK with a C.
Which is also pronounced MODOK, but still, the point remains.
Yes. Last thing that's in development. Fear Agent is in development at Amazon.
This is Rick Remender.
Yeah, Rick Remender's crazy sci-fi.
Weren't you guys telling me there was like a giant bidding war for this?
Yeah, there's a bidding war between like TNT and some others. Like not a real bidding war.
So Amazon got it. That's better than TNT.
I mean, it's good for Rick Remender. So just real quick, the premise of it was like a sort of a pulp sci-fi thing, but the guy himself was what?
He was an alien exterminator. Earth had been invaded and basically taken over, and he had been one of the guys who was last Jedi defense that failed.
Yeah. He's like a very blue-collar-y kind of dude.
Yeah.
And it was drawn at first by Tony Moore from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it like looked really beautiful,
well,
great
went
coloring.
Back and forth between Tony Moore and who was the...
Jerome Opena.
They did...
really good art team. If I'm not mistaken, like everything Rick Remender does, it kind of veered into dark territory.
Yep. Yeah. I wound up really liking it. So here's... Interestingly, it's... Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg from This Is the End in the Interview are executive producing. David Sandberg, who did Shazam, is on board to direct the pilot. So.
I have no real thoughts on this. I was not connected to the comic, but it sounds like they've assembled a pretty decent group of people.
I've read the comic. I have the hardcovers, and it's good.
What is this going to... Great? Amazon?
Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah. I will watch it.
This is news that I had that I went in sort of like a don't care, oh wow, now I care. The Witcher has an anime coming to Netflix. I don't love The Witcher. I didn't care. It's from the people who did Dragon Prince. Now I care again.
To me, it's a little weird because in the sense that I like you, Randy. I'm lukewarm on The Witcher.
Yeah.
I might just finish it since I'm a little over halfway through, but that's what I feel like that's what I would be doing is watching it to finish it.
Yep.
Anyway, but if it was a property I like, I don't usually when it's still finding its feet, I wouldn't want an animated spinoff. It's just a little too early. I feel like that's something you do in the second or third year or something like that.
You don't want a Star Trek Picard animated series?
I don't.
Featuring a talking monkey and MODOK.
When Firefly was at its peak, I wouldn't want a Firefly side series or
but
anything
like
that.
But now I really like an animated Firefly, and I think you're the only one. You do not want that either.
Nope.
I believe it's the only way we're ever going to get any more Firefly.
Yeah.
We're never going to get live action.
Although, I'm sure you saw the thing that at least percolated around, and I'm sure it was mostly meaningless, where they're like, who owns it?
Fox.
They're like, Fox would absolutely... I saw this headline. They're like, Fox would absolutely consider a new Firefly series.
Yeah.
I think it's like one exec said, yeah, if we got to get all our ducks in a row, sure.
Or does Disney have it now? I don't know.
Yeah, whoever it was, somebody said that they would do it. And so the next thing you know, it's got to make all the rounds again.
Was it on WeGotThisCovered.com?
It was not. It was actually something at least quasi-legitimate. But yeah, I wouldn't really want to do those. Right. Nick, your opinion is more important than ours because
You're the Witcher fan.
You enjoy Witcher, as does Anna here and most of the rest of the people in the civilized world.
Just not me and Dave.
Yeah.
We hate that and House of X.
Yeah. And Deadpool.
High
five.
Everything's...
Hateration high five.
Popular thing haters unite.
Nick, are you going to check it out?
Yeah,
I mean, you're obviously
going
to check it out, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially since I think this article, I don't think there's been any like confirmation one way or the other, but the voice cast actually doing like Henry Cavill doing Geralt, if this does indeed follow Geralt of Rivia or if this actually is doing one of the side characters.
Right, have they said anything
like
that?
So Netflix has confirmed it. It's called The Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf. And
sounds like a more action-oriented kind of thing that I assume animation would be good at.
It says... the studio behind Legend of Korra. So, still, impressive.
Yeah.
And do they say anything about the voice direct? They didn't say anything about... voice cast or anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was the rumor that, like, Henry Cavill will be doing Geralt, and if that's true, that's cool. It lines with the show. I'm fine with it.
Did that rumor come from WeGotThisCovered.com?
It did not. even if it wasn't, I think it'd be interesting to sort of flesh out the world.
I think Clancy Brown should voice everyone there.
Everyone.
Clancy Brown is Yennefer.
I mean, that would be interesting. That might kill some interest in The Witcher. as good as Clancy.
Oh, I thought you liked Clancy Brown.
I do. He's on a really good television show that I watch every week.
All right. What's the show?
Emergence.
Okay.
Oh, I've only seen the first episode.
Yeah, he did not die. He's on there every episode, and it's amazing.
This is still in the rumor stage, I think, or the Quentin Tarantino talking about it. But he's talking about doing 5 episodes of Bounty Law, which was the show that was in...
Show within a show.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Right, the kind of... Wasn't this like a Bonanza-esque?
Yeah, Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, yeah, yeah. One of those
This might have also been him getting high and throwing out ideas. Exactly for
right. I've read like him saying like that he really is serious about it.
Well, yeah. And I saw him that he already wrote them. He wrote the episodes for the movie.
Right.
So that like, DiCaprio's background
and just yeah, I don't know if we quite finished saying what it was, but yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio's struggling wannabe Steve McQueen type character had his best shot that he ever had, I guess, was on this kind of Western that lasted a few seasons called Bounty Law.
Yeah.
And they show you what? They show you a few scenes of it being
just a
made.
A few scenes, yeah.
Made in the movie.
Jake Cahill is.
Anyway, the notion of actually producing the show that was referenced within the movie is insane, but I can kind of see it, you know, from somebody who's like probably got as much money as Tarantino does,
yep.
Can kind of write his own ticket doing whatever he wants to.
Especially, I mean, they broke up Hateful Eight into 4-episode Netflix yeah. series. I can
and,
see this.
And it is crazy to imagine that Leonardo DiCaprio would go and do even a 5-episode TV show.
But it's not. It's
but
not,
for Tarantino, probably.
I mean, 5 half-hour, that's not much more than a single movie.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway. It's just whether or not he will, like, take a smaller, you know, amount of money.
Right. Well, the weird thing to me is, and why I don't know if this is a good idea, is, like, if Tarantino is trying so hard to recreate the style of, like, a 50s or 60s Western TV show, I don't have any fandom for 50s and 60s Western TV shows. I don't know how much it would be tweaked a little bit to be kind of, like, a little humorous or to represent maybe,
well,
you know,
at this point, he's just making stuff for himself.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. The scene of Bounty Law that's in Once Upon a Time yeah. in Hollywood between him and Michael Madsen,
yeah,
it's a good scene.
Well, and that's the other thing is like there was absolutely good writing on those shows. I've seen bits and pieces of some of those old shows, and that's like that was sort of the golden age of people of done in one story.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like sort of the first season, all the original Star Trek and stuff like that. Like those guys knew how to do it. It was a craft that had been honed. It just doesn't immediately jump out at me.
No, I agree.
What bad guy would Leonardo DiCaprio play on a Star Trek?
Why would he have to be a bad guy?
Because he always played the heavy.
Oh, right. That was his thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't see him as a Romulan commander.
No,
I see him as like a human colonist on a world that was has changed wildly since it was first colonized.
What if they wanted him to be a Klingon?
DiCaprio's not a Klingon.
He could play, but he could play like the governor of a Wild West world. That's a very old school Star Trek
yeah,
thing.
That's true.
He's a corrupt governor of a Wild West
world.
What
if he is the racist plantation owner like in Jango
yes,
and Chain?
Oh, man.
You have my dilithium crystals. Now you have my attention.
all right. Couple trailers. First of all, Hulu has a new High Fidelity coming out.
Yep.
Which
right,
has
an adaptation of a well-known book, or like a new adaptation of a well-known book that was also a movie with
John Cusack.
John Cusack.
Yep. I love the book. Why am I blaming this?
Nick Hornby.
Nick Hornby's a great writer.
He is.
I love the book. I love the movie. And this new like gender flip version, which also looks more diverse, has Zoe Kravitz in the lead.
Yeah.
Looks amazing to me.
The one thing I was having trouble with, it looks shot for shot.
Well, that was what was weirding me out, and I've only seen...
I mean, I only watched
I haven't
the
read the book, and I've only seen High Fidelity once. I liked it. But I was like, okay, that's the character who was Jack Black's character.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously she's playing John Cusack's role. And I don't know if I'd noticed, I would have thought shot for shot, but it is...
There were scenes that were...
It is an adaptation just the same. It's not a reimagining.
Right, but here's the thing. It's going to be more of a modern setting,
mm-hmm.
and... Just by virtue of it being about women instead of men, you're going to change a lot of things.
Yeah, no,
right?
I agree.
And there is a lot of sort of relationship and like sort of gender politics snuck in there.
I like that they kept her name Rob.
Yeah, I was very taken with this trailer. I'm looking forward to seeing. And also, by virtue of it being like an 8 or 10 episode series instead of a 2-hour movie, they're going to have to expand. So I think the first trailer probably plays into the hey, let's show the people who are fans of the movie that we're not just like shitting over the whole thing.
Am I wrong? Is it Zoe Kravitz?
It's Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah,
and she looks
she's
great.
She's great. So
yeah.
What do I know Zoe Kravitz from?
I don't know. Okay. It's Lenny Kravitz's daughter.
I mean, I figured that part out.
she's really good.
Okay. Yeah, this doesn't really particularly hold my interest. So Randy, I will look forward to your report.
Then there was Ragnarok. This is also a Netflix show. It's a foreign show.
Yeah, it's a, I believe, a Norwegian show, if I'm not mistaken.
Possibly.
But it looks like basically it's about kid who's Thor?
Yeah, basically it's like a war between giants and gods.
Right, but that's not what the show looks like.
No, it looks like, no. like a high school show.
Yeah, it's like a high school show.
Yeah, and it seems like they're talking about, like, somebody was talking about how, like, the gods or like, the giants are still alive, and I got the impression, like, were they suggesting that, like, you know, these rapacious, like, oil drilling, you know,
yes, the companies are the giants.
They are, like, embody the giants, or maybe, like, the CEOs literally are transformed giants.
That's
or something.
What, well, I mean, we talk about giant corporations, that kind of thing, and I wonder if basically it was more of a metaphorical thing of, like, that the Asgardians are supposed to be taking down these, like, these corporations that are disrupting nature.
Right. Does the trailer show anything that's actually like a sword swinging, a monster? Are there special effects?
No, actual giants. Special effects. We see lightning.
Yeah, because he does. It is definitely Thor.
The thing, it intrigued me. I thought that was it was a cool trailer that was more about, to me, about like tone.
Yeah.
And I liked its kind of creepy. I mean, like, I don't want to say like sort of X-Files intrigue.
Yeah.
Would you say that was a little bit?
A little bit.
That was going on there.
It reminded me a lot of like Troll Hunter. I know that's kind of a weird one, but just kind of the feel of it.
Troll Hunter did have like special, like right out of the gates.
I think this one will. I honestly guarantee it.
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be them literally fighting giants, because when they were talking about giants, they showed like the corporations and stuff. I believe this will be more metaphorical. It's like they represent the natural world and they are trying to overcome the modern day giant.
Let me bridge the theories.
Yeah.
I think that it is going to be that, but I do believe that there will be actual creatures and stuff like that, and like kind of more connections to Norse mythology. I don't think it'll all
maybe
be metaphor.
But it comes out in like 2 weeks, and there was no shots of giants in that trailer.
That's true. Unless they're, and you would think that they would tease that.
Yeah, exactly.
Netflix can do whatever they want. They know they're going to watch it. People are going to watch it.
But not always their foreign stuff. I was, at any rate, I was intrigued by this.
Yeah, I think it looks good.
I would like for it to be cool. I think I would like for it to have a little bit of, I'd like for it to be, ultimately, to reveal some supernatural stuff. But I'd be happy if it was like, yes, showed that these CEOs and destroyers of the land are in fact giants who need Thor's hammer through their head.
Yes.
And if the message it wants to dole out is one of rising up and destroying them,
yeah,
I'm for it.
Yeah. Finally, there's the Star Wars Clone Wars Season 7 trailer,
right,
which I just talked Dave into watching.
Clone Wars has had, I believe, like 8 different endings of various sorts.
Okay, so Season 5 was the final season.
Yep.
And then Netflix did a Season 6, and then that was the final season. And now Disney Plus is doing the final, final season, which is Season 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
This looks to be taking place very close to Order 66.
Right, yeah. I saw glimpses of it. I also saw lots of glimpses of things that were in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Like, you know how Revenge of the Sith opens, I think, with that space battle?
Yeah.
It's the one where General Grievous gets killed?
I think so.
And then you see, like, a bunch of ships in battle over probably Coruscant?
Yeah, it was over Coruscant.
Yeah. So I saw that battle in there. I think I saw some Order 66 stuff, like that bridge where a bunch of Jedi got killed.
Yeah, there's
it
also...
It looks like
Mace Windu and Yoda seem to be on the trail of the Order 66, which is interesting, so that they were tracking it down before it happened.
Yeah. You know, in the movie, it is kind of like, I saw like one or two lines close to the movie, and it's a little pathetic. They're like, you know, Samuel Jackson, in a very underplayed way, was like, I believe there could be a Sith attempting to influence us, and you'd think they'd be like, let's look into that. but he makes it sound like it's just like a, hey, just FYI.
Yeah.
Just keep your eyes open.
Yeah.
If this could kind of redeem the movies in the way that some of the other ones have by showing that, behind the scenes, they were sending out
missions.
They
were close to it, and that's why Order 66 had to be given.
That would be kind of cool.
Also, it looks like Ahsoka is walking away from Anakin, and his anger stuff is starting to get out of hand.
Yep.
So.
Well, I like that.
You haven't finished Clone Wars.
I have not finished Clone Wars. Has that already happened?
She got basically framed and kicked out of the Jedi Order.
Oh,
so she is. This
framed
is her.
For...
It was like the murder of somebody, but it was. It was something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but essentially she got kicked out of the Jedi Order, and this is her returning to help somebody.
Well, she's working with the Mandalorians.
Yeah, the Mandalorians.
It's not Duchess Satine. It looks like. I can't figure who that character is. I think she must be your sister or something, because she looks like...
She looks like Satine, but I...
Yeah, well, she looks like, what's the... Sabine?
Sabine.
She looks Sabine's sister, but that's from Rebels, and that'd be, she'd be way too young at this point. So, it seems like it's in that family.
As far as like the them showing a few big enticing scenes, the biggest is probably that at the end you see Ahsoka squaring off with Darth Maul. And it is kind of cool, really, that Ahsoka's been built up to such a cool character that we could see her facing off against Darth Maul and be like, oh, it's on.
Yeah.
And not like, oh, this little Padawan who called, what do you call her, Snips? Is just going to get owned by Darth Maul.
Yeah.
It's cool to see how her character has grown and also just become a badass.
Also, they redeemed Darth Maul, who was basically a no-nothing growling pit bull guy, and they made him much more sinister and smart, like having him basically start the crime cartel.
Yeah.
And then become this threat that he goes all the way through to Rebels. So I Clone Wars rescues a lot of the prequel stuff for me.
What I thought was kind of interesting is they're talking to some of the, was it Cody and some of the other clones, Rex. That have...
Well, then there's the Fives and a bunch of that.
Yeah. Who was the one who said... That one of them said, like, we clones have mixed feelings about
Rex.
The war.
That was Rex.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that, in the previous ones I've seen generally showed them saying, like, didn't indicate that they had any thoughts on it at all.
Right.
That they had nuance of character, but that they were like, of course, this is what we live to do. The notion that they might have some misgivings, at least some of them, the more advanced ones, what do they call them, ARC troopers and stuff?
I'm really curious to see what they do with Rex and Cody, because they do follow Order 66. They do end up killing people.
Oh, really? Jesus.
Yeah.
They have control chips.
I assume they were going to do something where they didn't have to do that.
No, they have control chips.
Yeah.
And essentially, I think in Rebels it's revealed that Rex removed his.
Yeah.
And that's how he basically... It was like Rex and Wolf and somebody else.
Yeah.
They removed their control chips, so they're no longer under control. But they definitely... So seeing some of the ramifications of that would be interesting.
For sure.
Especially since Rex is one of the most badass characters of Clone Wars.
Yeah. It's too bad that more of this stuff wasn't in the actual Clone Wars movies, but, Star Wars is a big, sprawling franchise, and sometimes it, for better or worse, it resurrects itself in its appendages.
Thank you, Dave Filoni. It has basically become the...
Filoni has done a lot for Star Wars.
And he was
Star Wars.
Heavily involved in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, he was.
And he was also an X-Wing pilot who blew up some, jackasses.
All right, sad news to close this out. Mr. Peanut has died.
Man, I barely know what's going on with this. This is some Super Bowl thing.
It's a Super Bowl ad. But apparently, the level of like seriousness that the planters are trying to roll with this is just kind of crazy. That's why it's on my radar.
They're not really serious about it. I mean, like, he dies saving Wesley Snipes. How serious can they be?
But I guess they're trying to, like, that this is his death. Like, he actually dies. And...
Who cares?
Right.
But it's, he's a known figure, and by doing this kind of, I think, in the ironic sort of way that they are,
they're
playing it semi-serious, it becomes one more bit of absurdist internet humor, but pretty clever. Enough of it for us to have mentioned it.
Yep.
Top of the show here.
What's next? And Ronald McDonald getting assassinated?
Hey, have y'all seen the trailer that has Sam Elliott on it?
Not yet.
Do you know the deal?
I know that it's him doing Lil Nas.
Yeah, he's doing the lyrics for Old Town Road.
Oh, God.
What he does, but he delivers it. It's like, it's like if you were to speak the lines of a song in like a very serious, weighty way. He walks into this bar, like this Western bar, and he like sits down at the stool, and everybody's like looking, and I think you see somebody maybe almost like gonna go for a gun, and he starts saying the lines, not singing them, but it's as if he's like doing like this Shakespearean monologue, and like he delivers it so well, it's pretty awesome actually.
Yeah, Sam Elliott.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
If Mr. Peanut died saving Sam Elliott, we'd revere him as a hero.
Yeah.
I watched
that Sam Elliott doesn't need Mr. Peanut to save him.
That's true. Get out of the way, Peanut.
I watched the Grammys the other night, and I literally am like, I am so disconnected from music. I'm like, I don't know who, like, at least 75% of these people are. So.
I know Lil Nas. I know Lizzo.
Lizzo, yeah.
And I do know...
Billie Eilish.
Yeah. And that's it. That's it. That's everybody.
Yeah, that's
she basically won every award that there was.
She won every award, and then she ascended to the heavens.
Yes.
She's like, my work on this earth is done.
I won all the awards, now I do a Bond song, and then I descend to the, to the heavens.
Yeah, now they're going to be able to be like, featuring music by multiple Grammy Award winning.
All right. That's it for news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, January 30th, and, you know, this was a five-week month. I just realized that today.
Oh, yeah.
That's part of why the comics have been sort of off a little bit. We haven't had, like, a full week of comics. This is close.
Yeah,
it's close. But it hasn't gotten all the way to the top row yet, which is weird for us.
Yeah, just the sheer, and what that means to y'all listeners is the sheer amount of comics we have does not fill up all the
available slots.
Yeah, the available slots. Yeah. Four rows up, but not five.
So all our picks this week are number twos, basically. Even Dave's technically is a number two.
It's true. Second part of a run.
Dave, why don't you talk? We talked about this last week.
Yeah, yeah. This will just be kind of a quick follow up to it. It turns out the second issue, as I was hoping it would, and I was pretty confident it would, of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles under Sophie Campbell, is also really good. This is issue 102 of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yep. And this is the storyline that is, well, the previous issue was told from the perspective of the new turtle, Jennifer?
I think Jenny.
Jenny, yeah, it stands for, like, Jenica.
Yeah, Jenica.
I think. But the daughter of Shredder transformed via blood transfusion from a turtle into a turtle, and now allied with them. It's told that was the first issue was really almost all from her perspective, as she was like sort of protecting this area of the city that where a mutagen has gone off, and like a big chunk of Manhattan, like many city blocks, is like filled with mutants. It's lawless. It's walled off until people can figure out how to keep it from spreading, and if there's like a cure and all that. So in short, you've got a sort of a little bit of a Batman No Man's Land or Escape from New York situation going on here with a bunch of cool mutant animals running around.
Yep.
And the various turtles kind of doing their vigilante stuff. They are all really broken up, and there's more of it in this one from losing Splinter. And so they're like kind of in only occasional communication with each other. There's a lot of they just don't want to like talk about it.
I feel like they're almost background characters in this. Like, it is definitely Jenny's story.
It is, although there's a decent amount of time given also to Raphael in this one. Raphael, who's been off on his own with who's the little kid he's got with him, the little dinosaur thing? I think I remember looking it up in the previous
Pepperoni.
One. It's he's got his own baby Yoda. I want to say it's like a little dinosaur creature. I thought it might have something to do with like the Triceratons, like it's like a little alien dino or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's now dressed in a parka.
But it's wrapped up in a parka, and he is sort of making friends with one of the former enforcers of the big sort of bad or the roughneck, like almost the kingpin of this area of the city is Old Hob. That's the mutated cat that goes back to this whole relaunch like 10 years ago or whatever it was, 7 or 8 years ago, who I know early on, Splinter, when he was still just an actual rat, gouged his eye because he was trying to make off with one of the turtles they were covered with goo. Yeah, I had to remind myself of that and reread it the other day. And I guess he among other things, blames Splinter for losing his eye. But he's, you know, basically like a crime boss. I think he's kind of got a code of honor.
Yep.
It's clear that he's not, like, fully bad. And indeed, one of his lieutenants in this, who's mutated into, what is she, looks like kind of like a puma?
No. Remember the other one.
Yeah, there's a cool porcupine in this.
It looks like a lioness.
Yeah, you might be right. I think it is, because it looks like Nala from Lion King.
Yeah.
But she got a cool leather jacket. Anyway, she's one of his big enforcers, and she's clearly having doubts and trying to figure out how to kind of, like, rein in his own out-of-control people who are, you know, they're, like, kind of getting fascistic. It's, you know, like that Stanford Prison Experiment where guards turn cruel.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. They've become, you know, gang-like and thuggish. And indeed, there's some cool action in here fighting one of the nastier ones from his guards, a big old porcupine dude, who not only is like a nasty quill shooting fighter, but is it looks like he's got designs on sort of usurping power from Old Hob.
Right.
So he kind of would promise a more lawless time, and he doesn't have the honor level of Old Hob.
He's essentially a Starscream.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely the traitorous underling.
Yes,
but who's kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's also like Sophie Campbell likes to do these quiet scenes. There's a lot of scenes at, like, the house that the turtles are staying at where they're interacting with each other in these very small ways, and you get, you know,
Her art really depicts that those small ways, though. It's like the level of emotion that she is able to sort of
to show a couple of the turtles like in the house just walking past each other and notably not talking to each other.
Yeah,
like Michelangelo and, clinging to his cat.
Yeah, he's like got a pet cat that it's he's like kind of putting
support animal.
All his it absolutely is. He's like putting all his all into it because he can't get over having lost a Splinter. By the way, old Hob and his like kind of dingy. Kind of
military
jacket. He looks cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
I hadn't, you know, because I haven't followed this book for years, and I just remember him from the early issues, and I had no particular opinion on him, but Sophie Campbell draws him so cool that I'm like kind of more back on board him, as well as his enforcer, who's the one who
I think
they're
going to
set up a romantic thing. I'm going to call her Nala, even though it's not Nala. Is there going to be a romantic thing with Raphael and her?
I could see that.
Anyway, there's all kinds of cool stuff going on in this. And in addition, the porcupine guy sets in motion some kind of cool events that are clearly going to be the big action of next issue.
Name is Sally.
Sally, all right. Sally is the enforcer that we like.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just, it's kind of everything is going right in this one. It's got the sort of character downtime is good. The action is good. I like the subplots and intrigue. And I like the general situation of this kind of mutant, outlaw mutant town.
I like being on board a Ninja Turtles book again.
Yeah, it's a thing I didn't know I needed until I got it. And then I was like, I love the turtles.
Yeah, I grew up with the turtles.
When they're cool, I love them. It's kind of like, you know, how I can get tired of Wolverine for a few years at a stretch.
Yeah.
Then I'll read a good one and I'll be like, I love Wolverine. All right, what you guys got?
Nick?
I have a second issue as well. This is Thor number 2.
So we can now reveal what happened at the end of Thor number 1
that we didn't want to say. I don't think there's a way to talk about this without revealing.
No.
So Thor is now a Herald of Galactus.
And not necessarily willingly. There was this big threat that's going to wipe out the entire universe. In fact, it opens with him killing the DC universe.
Yes.
Which is a little on the nose, but I kind of found it funny.
Yeah. I like that it's just out of panel. There's like a Daily Planet.
You see the Daily
Planet. But you see it kind of from the bottom.
You see the Flash and Green Lantern. I read the dialogue.
And like, missed it. I had to point it out to her.
The dialogue and I was like, wait a minute. Did he just... And then I went back and I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely...
What is this thing called? It's called the Winter something?
Oh, it's...
There's a name for it.
And it's a cool name. It's a
Black
cool
Winter.
The Black Winter. Black Winter is the like cosmic entity that destroyed the previous universe that Galactus lived in before our universe, before the Big Bang, and is now that the Black Winter has returned, is going to destroy the present universe.
Is that an actual thing? Is the Black Winter?
Nah, it was invented
for
this.
It was probably Donny Cates' third metal band or something.
So, Galactus was like, he needs to become powerful enough to challenge it. And he's like, I need you, Thor, as my herald to back me up.
Thor is like supposed to like be the person that kills him, right? So there was
Thor's the person that kills Galactus.
Yeah, kills Galactus. And Galactus basically, to change that, decides to make him his herald.
And yeah, and now they're on this, they've got to find these five key planets that will power Galactus up to stop Black Winter.
But I like that Thor, I mean, definitely has some of the same things as Silver Surfer.
His eyes are wide open.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you kill everybody on this planet. The way he gets around that is very clever.
Yep. And also, Thor's
actually
a badass.
Yeah.
the major action in a lot of ways of the issue is that Galactus has chosen a planet.
Yeah.
And he is like, almost like kind of a hunger frenzy.
Yep.
And
he looks emaciated and like missing a limb and just...
In his weakness. I remember John Byrne depicted this back in the 80s when he was weakened at one point and hungry as him literally just becoming smaller. He looked like he was 20 feet tall instead of like 100 feet tall.
Yeah.
And, here he actually looks like he's like, as if parts of his body have come off. It's a little more ghoulish and a little more violent in something that happens later on. But yes, essentially you have all these, the locals, the natives population of this planet that are in a panic. And Thor is trying to figure out how to quickly get like the whole population of the planet off before Galactus goes to town.
And the way he does it, very cool.
It's super cool.
Yep.
And I love that his crows, right?
Mm-hmm. Ravens.
Ravens. Was it Hungen and Mungen?
Hugen
and Mugen. Whatever.
Hungen and Mungen.
Hungen and Mungen. I like
H&M.
Whatever. I like that the way that they're used. The art is beautiful by. Nick Klein.
You know, the only thing I was sad to see was that dumb Thor dog.
Me too. I was really upset to see Thor dog.
Oh, Thorgy is fun.
No.
He was luckily only there for like two panels, but, but there's two panels too many.
He's a bad idea and he should be gone.
No, if you read Jason Aaron's run, Thorgy became sort of a part of it.
Wait, Thorgy? I thought it was Thorgy or something like that.
I think it's Thorgy, if I'm not... Or it might be Thorgy, but...
I think it's Thorgy. I think Thorgy is probably an internet picture of a corgi in a Thor suit.
Yes.
That's awesome.
What would happen if Hela...
It is Thorgy.
...put Thorgy to sleep?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just throwing... it's just an idea.
What if Thorgy went to live on a farm?
No, that's mean. Why would you do that?
Because he's a dumb idea and he should be going away. He can go live with Deadpool.
Do you remember what happened to the dog in Afterlife with Archie?
Yes.
It's just a thought.
This is like what some people say about Lockjaw, that he should be put down.
But Lockjaw's awesome and Thorgy's dumb.
Yeah. Some people like Thorgy and Lockjaw, and they're both right.
I've never heard of any of them. Even in this room, there's nobody who thinks
that. No one likes that. Nobody likes Thorgy. Thorgy can go live in Krakoa with all the mutants.
But look, it's a testament to how cool this is, that in spite of the fact that there's two panels with a character that we don't like a lot,
yes,
it's actually a really good issue.
It is a really good issue.
And well, some people might like...
Donna Cates actually loves the Marvel Universe in a weird way, a metal way.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm not a metal guy, but I enjoy a dabble, and I feel like he does it in such a way that I feel like this is the kind of... You know, I was reading... who's writing Iron Man right now?
Dan Slott.
Dan Slott was almost a little overboard in all the references when I was reading Iron Man 2020. I was just like, I felt kind of inundated with Marvel Universe references.
Yeah.
Like, he's thought about this a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie Cates is the right balance for me right now. Like, a bunch of cool, a few cool references to the Marvel Universe, but I didn't feel like I was reading his scrapbook of fan ideas.
Right. He does have most of his work. I just finished reading Silver Surfer Black, and there's a lot of references to... thing of the Marvel Universe, but it's not kind of like a...
He's doing what we've seen a lot of writers do, which is like, sometimes he mainly references one or two books that he has done as well.
Right. Oh, yeah. He's definitely built up his
cosmic
world.
I was down with the fact that, the main threat in Silver Surfer Black was Null, the god of the symbiotes, which he invented in Venom. I'm like, that's perfectly cool. Null's a cool idea, as it turns out, and Silver Surfer's a good opponent.
I also want to rewrite that... Thor is not a huge favorite character of mine, but I like him. This is kind of the most unique thing I've seen with Thor in a while. The idea of him becoming a herald is bizarre, but it somehow works.
Well, the weird thing is he's in a kingly position right now.
Yeah.
You think, oh, well, like a herald is kind of a servant. And
not so much.
The servant bites back is, I guess, the theme of this issue.
And I will not reveal, but there is an awesome stinger at the very end of things to come. And it's amazing.
Volstagg! Actually, Volstagg
actually does
hear it.
He's really cool.
The Brian Blessed of comics.
And I also want to say, I don't know if it does it in all of the Marvel comics this week, but there is a exclusive preview for Strange Academy.
It's also in Doctor Strange.
Is it in Doctor Strange? Yeah. A new book by Scotty Young and Roberto Ramos that's basically Hogwarts in the Marvel Universe. And I say that in a kind of loving tone.
It looks like fun.
Because it looks like a lot of fun, utilizing sort of the Marvel Universe.
It's called Strange Academy, as in like Doctor Strange's Academy?
Probably.
Brother Voodoo runs it.
Brother Voodoo is the person who runs it.
Is it like... Is the Strange in the Strange Academy, is that font the Doctor Strange font?
It is. Basically, they recruit students with magical potential into this weird magical academy that's outside space and time to come and learn magic.
By people like Shaman and Magic and Damon Hellstrom. It just sounds like a fun idea. Yeah. So I want
Damon Hellstrom should not be allowed on any campus.
No.
He's the son of Satan.
Yeah.
He's nice, though. He helps people.
Uh-huh. Sometimes he helps them into hell.
I mean, there's that.
It looks like fun. My pick is number two, also came out the same week as Thor last time, and that is Star Wars number two, which I am shocked to be really still liking this as much as I do. I mean, Mandalorian, of course, and has put me back in a Star Wars mood a little bit.
Yep.
Rise of Skywalker, I was mixed on. But this look at, like, what happened immediately after Empire is a thing I don't think I've seen before.
Yep.
It's very heavily focused on Lando, and how he starts to fit in with the Rebellion. They show how they started working on this plan to rescue Han. And then what the Rebellion did after the Empire when it was sort of scattered a little bit. This is definitely the Rebellion is down. Like, they lost some people, they lost some hands, they lost some lightsabers, and they gained
a scoundrel. They lost some Hans.
and this is them sort of trying to make their way back. It's really interesting. I like the artwork.
That first issue, I remember, by the way, had a really cool blockade escape sequence, which was not easy to depict in comics, to be honest. And because they're always so vague about how the blockades work in the movies, they kind of came up with a few kind of neat little simple rules in this that were cool.
And tied into that, there's a reason why the Rebellion doesn't just regather. They have a reason for that as well. Definitely, Sewell has thought his story through as to why he does. Why not just go right into where they were in Return of the Jedi?
Yep.
Jesus Sass does the art. It's really nice, very sort of photoreal. And Jabba makes an appearance. It's a really good second issue.
If it doesn't have Baby Yoda, I won't read it.
There's no Baby Yoda.
No! Alright, Anna, would you like to regale us with your pick of the week?
Yeah.
I know it was a toss-up.
Yeah, it was. It was a toss-up between Vagrant Queen, which was, the first issue of the second volume of it, and Suicide Squad.
And what are we going with Suicide Squad?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Suicide Squad.
All right, cool. We'll jump back to and mention one or two things about the other in a second. Now, I think I didn't actually read all of the first issue, but y'all were like, it's okay, but we're not sure.
I liked the first issue. Okay. I was definitely more up on it than
I know think everybody you else was Randy. Kind of adopting a wait and see, and it sort of paid off, I think, this week.
Yeah.
Never write off Tom Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true.
So tell me what happened, because I haven't read any of it.
So, do you want me to give you, like, a first issue summary, or
just
what?
A real quick version of it.
Okay, so a new boss comes in, pushes Waller out of the way, which immediately I did not like, because nobody Fs with the wall.
Yeah.
But he comes in, and he's, like, bad, scary government.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to, these are my people, damn it.
Right, right. Government. Waller's always got a kind of code of honor.
Yeah, and so he comes in and he's like, all right, so these are these dumb criminals. there's some bad folks across the pond over there, and they're, like, doing revolutionary stuff, like toppling governments and freeing migrants from camps, and we want that to stop.
Uh-huh.
And the Suicide Squad's like, that doesn't sound like they're doing too bad of things, and they're like, you guys are strapped to bombs. So, of course, they send in the Suicide Squad. Half of both teams die, and then at the end of it...
I knew that there was, like, a high kill count.
Yeah, like, a huge number of the characters they introduce die. And then at the end of that, they slap all the new guys in collars, too.
The defeated, revolutionary-type people get recruited forcibly,
I guess. Not collars, but they're basically have bombs implanted in the...
Oh, okay, they're bomb implants.
It's the explosive bracelet. There's always something where if you screw up in the Suicide Squad, part of you will get detonated.
Yeah, so they put those in, all the new guys too, and they're like, alright, y'all are the new Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this issue, they send them on a mission, which is again, like, almost a little too heavy-handed, like, government bad.
I think Tom Taylor sometimes does, his plots are kind of broad strokes sometimes.
Well, this one actually feels kind of akin to what we would have seen in a classic, in an Ostrander Suicide Squad issue, because it's essentially installing a government person into
a foreign power. Yeah. So,
what,
like,
do you mean,
basically choosing a person, like, that the government wants to be in there.
That the United States,
government wants to be in power in a foreign country.
What are they doing? Like, stuff in the ballot box?
Well, so the United States did stuff the ballot box. They rigged the election so that this guy would get into power, and the former guy that they threw out was like, I'm actually not stepping down.
Uh-huh.
So they were like, the Suicide Squad is going to go in, and they're going to make him step down.
Yeah.
Because
this is like some serious, like, this is like what America actually
does.
Yeah,
I know, yeah. I know. Yeah, that's what scary. I mean. That's interesting. It was a little heavy handed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they get in there, and, like, Deadshot is off with, like, three of the new folks.
Uh-huh.
And I really like all three of those characters, but basically, like, they get shot down in their chopper,
mm-hmm.
and Deadshot is like, all right, so we got our guy. We're going to get him to safety so that we can maybe, like, salvage some of our mission, because right now we're on the back foot. We're probably not going to get rid of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And as they get him out, one of the revolutionaries takes a gun and shoots herself and then shoots the guy that they're supposed to install.
Oh, interesting.
And then they're like, Lawton, what's going on? And the revolutionaries are all like,
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I guess the asset is down. And that's like sort of the cliffhanger ending. But I'm really excited because I hope that this means that shenanigans will ensue and it will be more than just the government coming in and forcing a bunch of brown people to do evil stuff to other brown
yeah,
people.
Yeah, if I Tom Taylor, I think, has a pretty keenly honed sense of social justice from what I've gathered. I'm friends with him on Facebook, or to say I follow him. I'm not personal friends with him, but he seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like he would, the same way I would kind of feel like John Ostrander did back in the late 80s, early 90s, Suicide Squad, critique the right people and generally kind of write a little subversively.
Definitely, that
also,
is what is happening.
I really have to applaud him for coming up with new characters.
I love all of them.
They're good characters.
I mean, that is a rare thing to be able to say about a batch of new characters that were introduced. And I remember that from when I was... I did read a little bit of the opening of the first issue, and I was like, oh, these seem like interesting characters. It's too bad. I guess I hear they all die or something.
Yeah.
Several of them do, but the ones that survive, he continues to sort of add more to their backstories. Builds up some animosity between several of the characters because of what happened in that opening gambit.
Yeah.
There's some stuff between King Shark and Finn, which is
a new guy
who King Shark killed his brother. So you can imagine how well they get along.
There's a bit of animosity.
I like how Taylor is writing
people.
Harley Quinn.
Oh, I see.
Which is no shock.
What'd you say?
The way that Tom Taylor writes Harley Quinn, because
I forgot Harley Quinn was
should
on this
be team. No shock because he's
he did a great job with her in Injustice.
She's very, very good in this.
How are the action scenes in it?
Actually, really cool.
He was usually pretty good with those in Injustice.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, in terms of action scenes, like I like this one where like King Shark and Finn are like launching themselves out of the water as they're getting ready to attack this, like,
yeah, that's pretty cool looking
deck of a gun platform. It's like really neat.
The artist Bruno Redondo does have a deft hand with it, and I like how he incorporates the Suicide Squad logo into the action.
Yeah,
oh, that's interesting.
Very a la Eisner Spirit kind of thing.
For sure.
So
that sounds pretty cool. I think y'all have convinced me that I will read the first two back to back. And see what's
it's one of those instances where the second issue is better than the first.
Yeah. I was actually really scared when I read the first issue, where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this book.
Yeah.
This is, like, I get what they're going for, but I was like, I don't think that I'm going to be able to stomach reading it. But I like it a lot more now.
Nice.
So my worries have been assuaged.
You got Tom Taylor.
I got Tom Taylor. That's what happened.
What else is in your stack of reading stuff to mention?
So I have Vagrant Queen, which is, like I said, the first issue of, like, a part two, where she sort of is pulled out of retirement and into another adventure. She's, like, a sort of, like, space piratey type or space bandit type that...
Out of curiosity, do you think somebody could walk in on this, without having read part one? Or do you think it's kind of like, you should probably have read part one?
Yeah, I think you could definitely, like, come in on this as if it were a first issue.
This is also the one that just got optioned for a TV series on Sci-Fi, right?
It did.
So fancy.
Yeah. And, like, the lady writing it likes to do, like, a lot of sort of, like, high-flying sci-fi type stuff. So, like, this is, like, her wheelhouse. It's really solidly done.
Mm-hmm. What else we got?
I have TMNT.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that's my pick.
I know you picked that one.
Yep.
I wanted to, but you stole it from me. We'll see who has the last laugh, Dave.
Whoa.
That's very dark.
And we know we're going to get into that level of infighting here.
Yeah, I actually have my Suicide Squad. They are waiting at your house for you. So I have the Jessica Jones Blind Spot that Kelly Thompson is doing. I actually really, really like this.
I haven't read that second issue yet, but the first issue, I don't think I've really particularly followed many books by Kelly Thompson, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
I think people who've, like, probably watched Alias or read any of the Jessica Jones comics, it'd probably be worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely. And then one of the end books that Marvel was doing this week, I read through a couple of them, but the one that I liked the most was the Captain Marvel one.
And this, for those who don't know, is the series of one-shots Marvel's doing that reveals... what could be, like, sort of the final days or the last heroics of some of their characters. They've done Miles Morales.
Back in the day, they did Hulk and
Punisher. Did they do Venom a few weeks ago?
Yeah, they did Venom.
They did Venom, and this week there's three that came out. So Captain Marvel, you thought, got a good finale?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was, like, a really cool moment for her. I won't say too much, because I think I guess the build-up towards it is, like, the large part of the why
but this is also comic. Kelly Thompson.
But yeah, too. It's also Kelly Thompson who has been writing Captain Marvel, so like she's got a hand on this, and like Carol and Jessica Jones, they are friends. So like since she's also writing Jessica Jones, she's gotten the opportunity to like I guess weave all three of the books that she is writing together into one.
I mean, I like when writers do that, to be honest.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a good way to have your own little micro-universe.
Well, it's nice, because, like, in this book, like, you get some emotional resonance as, like, you see Carol and Jessica's, like, friendship pay off and, like, their sort of, like, last adventure. And then you get to see, like, some future stuff. I should say it's set in the far-flung future where, like children of the current superheroes are the superheroes then.
So they get to play around a little. She does get to do some world-building and projection of, like, what's going to happen.
Yeah, like, for example, one of the small little things that I thought was fun was, like, Jessica and Luke's daughter and Danny and Misty's daughter are in a relationship, and they're, like, a crime-fighting tag team, just like,
you know, like their the heroes were.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Which was super fun, very cute, and, like, lots of little stuff like that that just sort of, like, made me interested in reading more.
Nice.
So
okay, so backing up the rest of the stuff that I've got this week on my stack, I want to mention a couple graphic novels. Owly the Way Home, which is the much beloved Annie Rutten's cute owl and worm book, gets a new full color and dialogue filled adaptation for Scholastic.
Yeah,
I'm hoping this will do for Owly what Bone did at Scholastic, because it's really good.
Yeah, it looks delightful. The coloring looks great.
Colors
on
look
it
great. Yeah. Birds of Prey, Murder and Mystery starts to recollect the Gail Simone, Ed Benes run on Birds of Prey. I hear there's a movie coming out, which is why they're doing it.
Yep.
This was really good stuff, and it's been out of print for a while. It is expensive as hell online to find those original trades.
Yep.
So it's nice that they're getting that back in print. Other single issues, Star Trek Picard number 3 wraps up the countdown story leading into Picard. We'll talk about Picard in a little bit.
We all
like the show. And there's definitely some stuff in this miniseries that I didn't realize played so directly into it.
Yeah, we actually reread an issue or two to kind of, now that we've seen the show, and we're like, oh, there's no less than 3 characters from the show on this in this comic, and some pretty key stuff about how things got set up by, and what you will see in the first issue.
I am likely to buy the trade of this one.
Yeah, it was good.
Amazing Spider-Man Daily Bugle is a miniseries focusing on the various Daily Bugle characters, so especially, notably, it is Ben Urich is the lead, of course. Robbie Robertson's like...
He's the new editor-in-chief, right?
Yeah, and his daughter is like a social media expert. And so that's that's sort of the focus, is she and Urich are sort of teamed up. And Peter Parker's back to being a freelance photographer. Usagi Yojimbo Color Classics is a reprint of... Not the first Usagi, but maybe one of the first Usagis.
Yeah, it's... It must be old because the way he draws him is so different.
Brand new colors by Rhonda Pattison, which is really nice.
Oh, I thought it was the guy who did the coloring since forever.
Nope.
Okay.
New colors.
Anyway, it looks good.
Looks really good, and this is going to lead into them doing collections of all the original Usagi stuff, which I will definitely be picking up, because why not have Usagi in 3 volumes?
Triple dip.
Doctor Strange number 2, which is Doctor Strange facing off with a magically powered Wrecker.
That's the Doctor Strange Surgeon Supreme, right?
And I really liked that. I thought it was a good issue and a good use of the Wrecker to face off Doctor Strange, which is a weird choice but makes a lot of sense in the context.
Yeah, Mark Waid made that work.
Immortal Hulk number 30, which continues the Hulk using sort of shadow operation bases to go after the Roxxon Corporation. And in this particular one, there's a big kaiju attack launched by Roxxon in Arizona, and the Hulk has to bring his sort of team of people, including, like, Rick Jones, who's back and has powers.
That is...
And Harpy and Dr. Zemnu Samson.
Zemnu the Titan?
Yep. And they basically are facing off with Kaiju while Roxxon is trying to manipulate the PR to their effect. And then, kind of weird to put on the cover, because Zemnu shows up on the very last page.
I suspect that Alex Ross was like, please let me paint him.
Yeah. Criminal number 12, which wraps up this run of Criminal. It's really good. It plays out a very important aspect of the Criminal overall continuity, which is, these are usually standalone stories, but there's little bits that connect it. There's a big character moment in here that goes back to the very first issue, which I really liked. As well, there is a teaser. Brubaker likes to do these little teasers for his next projects.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically, sometimes not even like, they're basically like comic book versions of the trailer, a little 3-part story. That is actually just a story that isn't actually anywhere reprinted. It's just, like, done as a little story that gives you a sense of.
A pure teaser.
Yeah, so he's done that for Criminal. He did that for Fatale. He did that for... Basically, all his projects get this. Well, Chris Condon, I don't know who that writer is, and Jacob Phillips, who I believe is Sean Phillips' son, have a new book coming out called That Texas Blood, and Jacob Phillips' art looks a lot like his dad's. And this is a little three-page teaser about a sheriff in a small Texas town, and I am fascinated. It looks like basically it's going to take the place of Criminal, which I'm happy about.
Interesting.
And Brubaker also mentions that after this, of course, that he's working on a new pulp western. It's a Wild West story about a pulp writer in 1930s New York. It's going to be an OGN like My Heroes Have Always Been Junkies.
Nice.
And then he and Sean have a new monthly series in the summer, but they're not announcing it just yet.
Huh.
So they are moving on to something else. But anyway, great finale to a 12-issue Criminal series. Image also has the return of Sex Criminals for its final arc. It's been gone forever, but it's back. And Protector, a new sort of post-apocalyptic story by Simon Roy, who wrote, what am I thinking? Not Glory, but the other one that he did.
Prophet. It's also, and it has some really great artwork in
nice
it.
Nice artwork,
it
yeah.
Like Prophet, they're bringing in a bunch of good artists.
Yeah. I don't know who this artist is. It's Artyom Trakhanov.
Sure.
It looks like James Stokoe did the cover, and it's got a Stokoe-esque vibe.
Yeah,
to
I think people who like that kind of stuff should check it out.
And if you like comedic superheroes or Valiant, Quantum Immortality gets a new number one. That's all my stack. Dave, what else you got?
I think you hit all the things that I've got, so just whatever Nick's got to throw in the mix.
I have a new number one called Avengers of the Wastelands, which sort of takes the place of the Old Man Logan universe.
Okay.
And kind of sees how the world has moved on. And the big thing is Dr. Doom is trying to take over the entire world.
He does, like, I believe he's already in control of the wastelands of America or something, right?
Yeah, and now he's sort of expanding into multiple other spots.
Good for him.
Yep. He is being kind of stopped by Luke Cage and Jessica Jones' daughter, who now is Thor.
So does she actually have the hammer, or she
has...
Okay.
She has the hammer.
Interesting.
There is a Hulk. I won't reveal who that is. There's an Ant-Man, which I thought was a very cool reveal on who that character is. There's also some really nice artwork in here. It's just...
I didn't recognize the artist, but it was whoever it was good.
I have a hard time with the Old Man Logan world just because Millar made it kind of seedy and...
he did that Millar thing.
Did his Millar thing. And writer Ed Brisson kind of takes the good from it and writes a really good story. Kind of... Not omitting the things that have come before, because definitely references a few things here and there.
Uh-huh. But he's not emphasizing it.
But he's not emphasizing either. And that's the kind of storytelling I'm down with.
I might check that out. I do like some Road Warrior, Mad Max type stuff.
And if you like that, that is sort of where I put this in. And then there are the 4X books that are hitting this week, which includes X-Force number 6, which is the end of the first story of X-Force, the end of the story of New Mutants, which... has the kind of dark finale to... been a stalemate about with kind of a local drug cartel and a few of the X-Men.
When you say local, do you mean in space? Because it's in isn't it?
No, this is the secondary story with Armor and Boom Boom and Glob, kind of like the other Young Mutants.
Okay.
They were visiting Beak and Angel.
Yeah.
And a drug cartel basically was trying... took them hostage to get... Krakoan drugs.
Oh, interesting.
They weren't.
So there are indeed two New Mutant teams that kind of get shown up in this series.
And this is kind of a dark ending, but it was good. Fallen Angels actually finishes its run with issue 6, with a final showdown between Quanon and the big bad Apoth. And then X-Men number 5, the Jonathan Hickman and Lanil Frantz. Traditionally, Lanil Frantz Yu, but R.B. Silva, who did House of X or Powers of 10,
one of them,
steps in to do this issue, which focuses on the Children of the Vault, which, if I'm not mistaken, was a crazy Bendis thing, which are like these weird advanced children that live in a kind of thing that is like the world, if you remember from Morrison's X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
This is sort of kind of a...
some sort of virtual thing?
Yeah, where the world, time passes differently and things like that. And is the resurrection of a character which I hadn't seen since Generation X, Sync, which I actually have huge fondness for.
That is S-Y-N-C?
Or S-I-N-K.
It is actually sick. He can transform into the kitchen sink.
No, he can basically mimic a person's mutant abilities.
His power is that if he gets in the water, he floats to the bottom.
Can't that be said for most people?
No, most people float.
They all float down here.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and some movies. Alright, so Dave and I remain Alamo Pass members.
Oh, yeah.
Which means we see movies a lot.
High five.
Everybody can be an Alamo Pass member now in Austin if they want to be.
And they should be.
Is that actually officially
open? Yeah,
it
officially hit yesterday.
Oh, nice.
And they should be. So Dave and I, we both see a lot of movies, hate Deadpool, hate House of X and Powers of X, and something else. We hate Thory.
Right, and we're practically blood brothers.
Yes. Bonded in hate.
Am I friends with you again?
Well, we're going about to talk about something we like.
Yeah, so we're about to talk. Well, I was going to start with something I like and you didn't like, but which destroys our bond.
All right, I didn't dislike it.
All right,
so we can still talk about it.
So let's quick talk about The Gentlemen.
Right, this is the new Guy Ritchie movie
that
probably comes from the tradition of Lock, Stock, and
Snatch
Two Smoking Barrels.
And he's done a couple others, Rock and Rolla, and. Yeah. A couple other things like that, crime movies that I feel like there's another one I haven't seen. I am in the tank for Guy Ritchie. I actually think I should probably go back and see like Rock and Rolla, even though it's generally not supposed to be so very, very good.
It's very on the lower tier of his movies.
But it's in the ballpark enough that I'll hate it, and you'll probably it's all right.
I really like Snatch. I really like Lock, Stock, and
not even.
I thought The Gentleman was sort of an evolution of what he does, and I thought it was his best movie.
I'll say this. I was a little cool on it watching it, but I sort of warmed to it by the end, and I'm not going to say it didn't turn me into a Guy Ritchie fan, although I've liked a few of his movies, usually his weird little side thing, like his Sherlock movie and stuff like that. And Aladdin was really good, yeah. I like commercial Guy Ritchie, that's weird.
Yep.
But I liked this more than I expected to. It's like a lot of these kind of movies. It's about a cast of kind of skeevy but likable types, mostly related to a marijuana empire in the UK.
Yeah,
run by
Matthew McConaughey,
who's kind of looking to get out of the game.
Yeah, as he gets older, he's looking to retire. And
by the way, this is all told through kind of wild backstories and asides and things that.
The main thing is there's sort of the sleazy PI Fletcher played with just delicious. it was so much fun, Hugh Grant.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen Hugh Grant have as much fun with a role.
And then Charlie Hunnam plays his consigliere to
Matthew McConaughey.
To Matthew McConaughey's weed kingpin, and he is. He clearly hates Fletcher, but he's also clearly worked with him before.
Right. And so the movie is structured around a sort of dialogue between
them. How does Charlie Hunnam play in this? Because a lot of his other movies, he's kind of dry.
Yeah. He's great here.
Okay.
I actually really
like him.
Nick, this is weird, so I'm going to reference another Guy Ritchie movie that I don't particularly like, but I know y'all do. Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm.
You know how, what's his name? Who's the guy who played Superman?
Henry Cavill.
You know how he got to kind of like shine a little bit in that? Like,
yeah, sort of Armie Hammer, who also has not gotten to shine a lot of
things. Right. I think in these kind of movies that are all kind of like fun, hip dialogue, lots of slang, lots of British swearing and stuff like that, I think he kind of gets to come to life a little bit more.
Pacific
Rim.
Is he English?
He's
or
English.
I couldn't remember if he was Australian.
No, he's
English.
I think he's English.
Yeah, so I think it actually helped a little bit to just be able to speak with his native accent.
Well,
probably.
I know that slows down actors when they're trying to. A lot of English actors doing an American accent will be notably weaker because they're so focused on the accent work.
Right.
Here he reminds me a little bit of like a Channing Tatum type dude.
Okay.
He's like a bearded. He's a bearded dude. He feels a little older. I quite liked him, and I thought he was a big part of what made this movie work.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily have thought that you could play him as a guy who was like a conciliary kind of guy, because he doesn't sort of seem like he's got enough brains in that department. Mm-hmm. But I think it came through pretty well in this.
Nice.
So they have a tête-à-tête going on between the two of them, and in the meanwhile, the story is filled in and side reference and all that stuff to what's going on.
Crime lord trying to get out, other crime lords trying to push in on him. All that kind of
stuff. Lots of twisty, turvy stuff. fun wannabe, like, there's lots of wannabe gangsters, yeah. actual gangsters.
Oh, Colin Farrell's great here as another he's a boxing coach who takes in good lads.
Yes.
Who only does gangster shit because he has to.
Yeah.
Which is how he describes it, and clearly not remotely true.
Yeah.
But he's great. When they introduce him in this scene, I really liked his introduction scene.
Uh-huh.
I liked everything with Colin Farrell in this.
Richie does introduction scenes really well because the Jason Statham from Snatch is amazing.
This was really, really good. I actually think it's not quite as frenetic as Guy Ritchie stuff usually is. It's a little bit more
refined.
It's still recognizably Guy Ritchie. He's still got that sort of sense of humor, but I compare it closer to Tarantino stuff in this particular case.
Because Snatch and Lockstock are kind of raw in their execution.
Yeah, this did feel like it was a little bit more laid back in a way. Mm-hmm. A little, like, this is a weird way to say it, but like how Tarantino was changed for Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit more like that. Still outrageous at times, for sure.
Yeah.
But maybe not quite as viscerally outrageous as some of the other ones.
All right, before we get to the TV main event that we all three want to talk about, let's real quick, Dave, you and I also went and saw Color Out of Space at Alamo.
Yeah, this is the already, like, cult Lovecraft movie that's... I actually don't know why it's, in a way, why it's getting such a limited release, because it's getting strong reviews. It's like at 80-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm surprised it didn't get a bigger release.
I believe it's because there's director Richard Stanley, who has been pariah since Island Dr. Moreau.
He's a crazy wild man, drug-infused director, from what I understand, who, like, walked off the set of... What was it?
Island of Dr. Moreau.
Island of Dr. Moreau. And that was like 1994 or something,
and
right?
Rumor has it, walked back on in disguise as a dog man so he could watch the rest of the filming.
I've heard some strange things. I gather he's made like some odds and ends documentaries since.
Yeah.
A friend of mine,
we have a friend, McGann, who was talking about it,
And
this is already set for release on digital or Blu-ray like February 26th.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I think they probably expected it to flop.
I believe it is right about to leave theaters.
And it's worth seeing
if you can catch it in the theaters. It is actually the kind of experience that I think is better on the big screen.
It's very beautiful. It's being shown at like Alamo Lakeland at only at like 9:45. It's worth seeing in the theater.
It has a few different sort of modes, I feel like. There's sort of almost a slightly art house vibe to it at times.
Yep.
But sometimes the characters actually have some depth and some warmth to them, even though Nicolas Cage is in it, and he does get a little wild man once or twice, but he's more or less reined in for a lot of the movie.
You were talking about how this, for you, is like four different movies. It's like it starts off kind of Spielbergian about this family in a house outside in like the rural country.
Yeah, they're kind of getting away from things. The mom is recovering from cancer.
And then there's like weird supernatural stuff and alien stuff, and it's... We don't want to say too much about it. We don't want to spoil it for Nick, but... It is definitely... I feel like it's the most Lovecraftian thing I've seen. It's got the sort of people going mad and alien
Well, the way
worlds.
It describes that sort of ineffable, like, other-dimensional threats,
mm-hmm.
without, like, being, like, real, like, this is what is going on, a lot of it isn't explained, it feels... You know, Lovecraft, like, wanted... There's a line in... I started rereading the short story it's based on, right? Mm-hmm. There's a line where somebody is starting to get afraid of what's going on, and it's the character who's like the water table guy is in the short story, and he's like, after hearing some of what's going on, he doesn't want to walk outside at night because he's afraid of, like, it's like he doesn't want the stars to see him.
Yeah.
That kind of weird sense of like alien menace, but like in a really indescribable way, is what Lovecraft writes about, but it's hard to translate to visual, you know, to like such visceral things and visuals. And I thought this movie did a great job of
that. Yeah, I also thought a little bit of Lovecraftian lore in there. The hydrologist has a Miskatonic University shirt.
Yep.
They name drop Arkham. They name drop, there's a weather report and they show like Dunwich and Kingsport and all that kind of stuff. So lots of little nods to a larger Lovecraftian. And there's definitely potential for more stories set in this universe.
Right. Basically. They said that was at least, I think, something that they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not have thought it would be like polished and work enough to do that, but I actually think it could work.
Mm-hmm.
So I started rereading the Color Out of Space short story last night, or I guess it's like a novella.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked. It is actually very close to what came out there.
Huh.
Now, it is set in like the 1880s, and it's a guy finding out about sort of these events through... other sources in like the 1920s, so he's finding out about them after the fact. But man, there is so much that's close to it.
That's interesting. There's a lot of it is so technology based.
Like the family dialogue and stuff like that. Like that is not in there, obviously.
Yeah.
And part of it is because you're hearing about it. This is a related story. But the thing about like the flooding and the dam and all that stuff is in there. The names are the same. The kind of weird nearby neighbor, whatever his name was, he exists in the book.
Ah, interesting.
It's much closer than I thought.
And the cast is great. Nicolas Cage, of course, is Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
And he's good in this.
Right, he's reined in, but it is still Nicolas Cage.
Joelle Richardson plays his wife. She's really good. Mm-hmm. Both the kid actors, the teenagers.
Yeah, they're like kind of oddly sincere. It reminded me of the kids in like Poltergeist, where they're like kind of a little annoying at times, but you kind of like them.
Their hydrologist I really liked. Yep. And Tommy Chong's fantastic in this.
He is excellent.
Yeah. So it's definitely worth a recommend. Okay. Let's talk Star Trek Picard, and there may be spoilers, so if you've not seen the first episode, you should probably stop here.
Yep.
So, before we get too deep into it, we're gonna talk about it a little bit. Dave talked about it for like an hour and a half this week.
Yes.
On his podcast, Tex Trek.
Yes. So yeah, we kind of did the deep dive on it. That's what we do on Tex Trek. We're going to be doing it every week. And right now, I was going to mention, you didn't know this, Randy, that in addition to the audio podcast, we also have a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. YouTube channel has, like, visuals on it. Father, he's always, like, if we're talking about something, he will have a visual of it. He'll have the ships and all this stuff. You know, you can get the podcast on, like, Apple, Google, Spotify, anywhere else you get podcasts, all that stuff. So, yeah, people should like and subscribe to Tex Trek and do that. Come along with us for the deep dive.
Yeah, I listened to it. I enjoyed it. I didn't realize you guys recorded it. I thought you were just on YouTube.
Yep.
And I don't have time for YouTube, but I do have time for podcasts.
I don't either. Like, if I were to listen to my own podcast beyond what I have to, then I would do the audio version.
Yep.
And, but if you do check out the video version, Father E is always looking to throw in little bits and pieces in there.
Oh, okay, cool.
Anyway, so yeah, Picard.
We all watched it.
Yep.
We all liked it.
Yeah, yes. I think so. I was surprised while I was watching it because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and I was surprised in mostly very happy ways.
So you said that. What did you expect? I'm really curious.
So I did not. I think the biggest thing is the mystery of the girl who comes to Picard, and for those who haven't seen it, Picard's retired and he's on his vineyard and he's a little melancholy. He has two Romulan sort of housekeepers.
Yeah.
And you do kind of catch early on that this is because he was aided in the mass evacuation of Romulus from a supernova like 20 years prior.
And by the way, that ties very directly into the Prelude comics, turns out.
Yeah, those characters are straight up in it.
Yep.
And are revealed, like a cool backstory thing for him is revealed in it. But yes, even from the trailers, everybody knew that a young woman who's like sort of like a, she's like a graduate student, comes to him with some sort of problem. And I did not know that she was going to link up so importantly with a character who is meaningful to Picard, and I don't know if we want to straight up say who it is.
Should.
All right. She is the daughter of Data in some way, either by Data or possibly by the character of Bruce Maddox, who was like a roboticist who wanted to make a lot of Datas back in one of the most famous classic episodes of TNG. Called Measure of a Man.
If I remember correctly, isn't Maddox kind of a tool?
Absolutely. But by the end of the episode, he's a little bit changed. And then in a later episode, one I just happened to watch the other day by random chance, you see that Data's actually corresponding with him, and it looks like they've struck up a friendship. And that's a very Star Trek Next Generation thing to do, is to kind of like change your enemy's philosophy. Right. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And Maddox is name dropped in this, and this woman. Picard has an immediate visceral reaction to help her, especially once he figures things out, because she is like the daughter of one of his like most cherished friends, and Data, who sacrificed himself at the end of Star Trek Nemesis.
Yep.
This movie came out like, it was like 20 years ago.
Oh yeah.
And Nemesis is not a beloved movie. It's got some good stuff, but it's overall not beloved. Data's sacrifice, I think, felt like a slightly wannabe version of Spock's death in Star Trek II. But like, this actually adds some resonance to it, which is one of the things that those are the big surprises for me, that it should all tie so closely together and have this feeling of like, it was almost more of a family affair, and Picard feeling the need to live up to a friend who literally gave his life for him.
Yeah.
So like he is all in on protecting this girl.
Nick, you and I are both a little more casual Star Trek fans. Like I don't know if you've seen...
I watched more Next Generation than I think I did of any other Star Trek.
I think that's true for me, too.
Just because Picard is my favorite captain.
Yeah.
And
it was like coming out when we were like teens or kids or
Data
youngish.
Was the most badass character.
Yeah.
Just because I thought he was a very interesting character.
Yeah.
Brent
Spiner put a lot into that role.
Yeah. And I really liked Riker.
Okay.
So what did you think of this?
I enjoyed it. I think Patrick Stewart does an amazing job. I like that there is a ton of action in this, and he is old man.
He is not at the center of the action.
He is not at the center of the action.
That was a good call.
It was a good call, because...
Patrick Stewart is literally an older guy.
Yeah.
The action, by the way, is good here. Like that.
Oh, yeah.
That fight scene between her and the Romulan agents.
There's
and her
two great fight sequences.
Yeah.
I would say it's a little better than just good.
Yeah, I think it's the choreography. The way she's fighting him is like freaking like how Batman or Deathstroke or somebody like
that
would fight.
Yeah. Yeah, she takes on this whole cadre of Romulan agents.
Well, I don't know if you know this name, Nick, but the Tal Shiar. They didn't name drop it yet, but I believe that's who they are. That's like the Romulan special ops.
So like secret police.
They're secret police guys, yeah. And she kicks the hell out of like two different groups of them. And those are great fights. Brutal.
On that opening fight scene, I wasn't quite sure what I was watching. Like, they were talking about activation. She hadn't activated yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. I felt bad that her boyfriend just got killed.
Yeah.
Because I actually thought the little scene with them was...
Yeah.
Genuine.
Did you notice that her boyfriend was one of the aliens from Star Trek Discovery?
He mentioned that.
The princess from the Star Trek shorts.
Interesting.
But, of course, that has also brought up one of the minor controversies of this, which is that they killed the black guy within 5 minutes of the show. The only black character on the show, which is unfortunate. We know there'll be more characters of color coming up, but it is probably one of those unforced errors,
just like a little bit of gaze
they did in Discovery.
Oh, why'd you do that?
Yeah, so that's a little too bad they didn't think that through. But... I'm with you. I thought they did a good job. Like, I bought their relationship. I cared about them. I'd known this character for 2 minutes, and I still felt it when they killed him.
Yeah.
And I think that's really impressive.
And then I bought into her.
Yeah.
And kind of her plight. I liked the fact that she had this feeling to go to Picard, but then
it's
left...
It's like it's implanted in her.
Yeah.
But then left him because she didn't want for him to be attacked. I thought that was actually very endearing to that character and gave her sort of a core.
Yeah, both of them have this, like, what feels like a high degree of empathy, which is, I think, a particularly Star Trek Next Generation thing.
Yeah.
Where Picard is, like, immediately fatherly towards her, and he, like, sort of immediately buys into her story. There's not any real pushback.
No.
He's like, yeah, come stay. We'll figure it out. We're going to get through this. And then later on, it becomes even more cemented. There's a creepy scene where she's calling her mom on a little hologram.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know what to do. And her mom is like, well, you should go back to Picard. And she's like, I didn't actually tell you I went to Picard.
Yeah.
I believe that was like, I mean, I'm presuming that was a hack. Of the Tal Shiar.
I don't think it was.
I don't think so either.
I think it was her. I think she knew
I think it's possible her mom isn't real.
I think it's a Maddox creation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That actually makes sense because it like even like glitched in a way that could just be that's the hologram.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure we'll see more of their backstory because apparently she didn't know about her sister, but her sister knows about her.
Yeah.
So there's a whole thing going on there.
And just the notion of sort of robot sisters and this like sort of. I mean, it fits what they've done with Data and Lore back in the day.
Yeah,
I also really liked Picard solving the mystery.
Yeah.
Him going to the Federation archives and, like, accessing
lots of Easter eggs there for those who want to find him.
Yeah, accessing something only he could and, like, looking at the painting that Data did.
One of the things I really like about the show in general, one of them is that, you guys talked about this on Text Track, but it feels... I love Discovery, but this feels so very Star Trek right away.
Yeah. I gotta say, having some known characters is very endearing, and the fact that it's, like, their best-known character.
Yeah, and that he can still play Picard to perfection.
Yeah.
Like, this version...
Well, that opening scene where he's playing poker with Data and what we will later realize is a dream sequence.
Yeah.
No.
But he's kind of sly in it, and he's, like... figures out that Data has a tell in poker, and the tell is that he doesn't have a tell.
Yeah.
But when he's... what is it? When he's...
It's like winking or...
His eyes dilate slightly or whatever.
When he's not bluffing.
When he's not bluffing as an attempt to mess with the head.
To show the Picard that he is bluffing.
And Picard is like... tells him that, and he's like... He's like, now that I know that you're aware of this, I'm not sure what subterfuge to employ or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like... It's a really fun sequence before the dream ends... there's also some symbolism in it that I don't know if, like, Data has a hand that had, like, five queens.
Yeah.
What was it?
There's all kinds of stuff that could be nothing, could be something.
Right.
More than likely it will be something.
The other thing I really liked about this, though, is that we don't see a lot of older people protagonists.
It's true.
And especially in, like, in the future of Starfleet, people, hopefully older people are not put out to pasture the way they are in our current culture.
Right.
And the notion that Picard is basically still... He is not the captain he once was.
Right, he's kind of melancholy, and he does ultimately feel like he's been hiding, he says, but he's, like, living a relatively satisfied life.
And he still managed to pull off one of the great humanitarian efforts of all time.
Right.
Even if Starfleet sort of didn't let him finish it, and he's still sort of bitter about... I look at him and I'm like, this is the kind of, like Patrick Stewart, which I think is definitely informing the character, This is kind of what you want to be like when you're an older person. Like,
yeah.
You want to be someone who's still contributing to society in your way.
You want to be compassionate and not turn into a little scared person.
Yes.
And Picard is not a person who's scared.
No, Picard is not. Picard goes with this woman he barely knows into mortal danger.
Yep.
Even though he is barely able to walk up
but
the stairs with her.
Picard.
Right. Yeah. And I think next episode where we see him figuring out the next step is going to be the one where we also see him doing, like, really getting active in this.
I also really liked little bits and nods. Earl Grey decaffeinated. Was great.
Yep. He's an older fella now. I like the dry humor of the two Romulans that are his
too.
Employees. Yep. They are kind of almost were functioning like Alfred.
Yes.
Keeping him a little bit reined in, so they're like, the great captain, you're up for your interview or whatever.
So, I have a question that maybe you or father even knows.
Yeah.
Is that his dog? Like, his actual dog?
I believe it's one of his rescue dogs.
Okay.
The dog he
number
endearingly
one.
Calls number one. who's a delightful pit bull.
Is super cute.
And as you guys humorously pointed out, Dave... basically, number one serves the purpose that Will Riker did. So he's replaced Will Riker with a dog.
Yes. Yes. I want to know what Riker... Because I think he'll either be in the next episode or some upcoming one soon. I want to know what Riker thinks about that.
I also want to talk about Allison Pill.
Oh, she smells so good in this.
She's really good in it. As sort of a... A synth? Or she's a scientist,
She's a roboticist well. They mention her. Actually, she was hired by that guy who, once upon a time, prosecuted Data for the right to copy him and all that stuff. So that guy apparently really did turn around, but
or not.
Well, or not. Yeah, we don't know. It would be. I'd be kind of sad if he was just like kind of a straight up villain.
I mean, he could be the guy behind the rogue synths.
It's true. And that's one of the big backstory thing is that the Mars shipyards, which is like where all the big Starfleet ships are constructed. Yeah. Got, like, utterly wrecked, 20 years prior by a weird robotic uprising, and robots are, like, illegal in the Federation now, or, like, that level.
And the Starfleet defenses were away helping with the Romulan
evacuation,
which is what a lot of people blame Picard for it.
They said that, like, Mars's atmosphere is still burning,
fire,
which reminded me of, like, those, those towns in, like, Pennsylvania and stuff where, like, a mine has been on fire for 30, 40 years or more.
I'm excited what Allison Pill brings to the show because she's a great actress.
Yeah, she's clearly going to be like the consulting expert on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited to meet the ensemble and everything for next episode. But I thought as a pilot, honestly, I don't know if there's a better Star Trek pilot. I think I know some would argue Deep Space Nine, which is a pretty solid pilot.
Yeah, I do also like the cage with the original guy who played Christopher Pike back when. I like the. What was the one that had William Shatner? Was that Charlie X? I can't quite remember what the formal one was, but it's absolutely up there. It's like in the top two, I'd say.
For sure.
It also introduces a possible villain at the end with a Romulan.
It does not paint the Romulans in a great position.
Romulans never are.
No. The Romulans that are working with Picard are very nice people.
But these are definitely sort of the militarized version of them.
They are on a Borg cube.
Yeah.
And it's designated, when they flash the text, a Romulan reclamation site.
Yeah.
Now, whether they're reclaiming all of the Romulan Empire or what, we don't know.
Yeah.
But that's the big sort of mystery to go.
This is fitting in with the notion that Romulus is destroyed, right?
That happened.
That happened. In the...
Picard like evacuated much of them, but I guess like among the ones who didn't get evacuated or didn't get saved would be Nero's family, because that was the whole motivation. This is the same accident that set in motion the events of Star Trek 09.
Yeah. Basically, Spock going back in time.
Yeah. He disappearing. That was his last-ditch effort to try and, like, or was the... He got pulled into the black hole that was supposed to stop the supernova, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
you don't... That's none of that is necessary knowledge. It's just kind of interesting that it does tie into that.
Yeah. I really like this. I am definitely looking forward to more.
I know it releases on technically on Thursday, but to me it's basically a Wednesday release because it's at 2 a.m. on Thursday.
If you're up at 1:30 in
the
morning.
That is not that late.
That is late.
That is not that late.
For normal people, it's a Thursday release.
It depends. Sometimes I'm up that late and sometimes I'm not.
If you're a crazy night owl, it's a Wednesday
release.
You
could take a nappy poo and then you get up and watch Picard.
Then you have to get up at 8 the next morning. It's tough.
Oh, yeah. You shouldn't do that. You should work it like around noon like I do.
All right. That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.